A Year in Japan, Episode 6.
Hello there. Welcome to A Year in Japan, Episode 6. Live from downtown Tokyo with yours truly, Joseph Tame. How's my voice sounding? I bought a new microphone this week because, you know, I was getting a bit fed up there with using that one built into the computer. You know, because when the fan goes on, you can't really hear anything. And it's a right pain in the arse. So I thought I'd buy this lovely phallic mic here, as I did. yes. So how does it sound? Does it sound good? I hope it sounds good. Anyway, I think we better get on with the show.
Yeah, so in this week's show, it's a bit of a sort of spur of the moment thing. I just felt like not doing the washing up. And also I got a call this week from Sheffield University. And asking me if I'd like to partake in a little project thing which involves this podcast. So I thought, oh, crikey. Oh, what am I going to do? Because, you know, like, I mean, this podcast is, it's all a complete, no, it's not that. No, it's an experiment, you see. So if I'm going to be able to talk about it and not get embarrassed and I have to up the quality, I've got no idea how to do that. But I thought by buying a nice microphone, maybe that would do the job for me. However, I don't think that's actually the case. But never mind. Anyway, so, and I thought what I'll do is I want to make this podcast a little bit more year in Japan, year abroad, education orientated. Because there's a lot of podcasts out there which are about generally people being in Japan, you know. And I'd like to do something that's a bit different from all those because, you know, I'm only a year abroad student. I'm only a foreign student for a year. And funnily enough, and so I might as well make use of it. And so this week I'm going to be talking about a few things which are particularly aimed at students in Japan or students of Japanese. So if that includes you, please do listen on. And yes, excuse me. So that's the general idea. So, yes, so on this week's episode, we're going to have a couple of things education-related, you know. And I'd like to tell you a little bit more about my charity work here in Japan. You know, I'm doing a bit of voluntary work with a British charity that's got a Japanese arm. And I'd like to talk about that a bit, so I'll be doing that. And what else will I be talking about? Let me see. I've quite forgotten. Let me think. Where's the pause button? Oh, I can't see it. You see, the thing is, right, is that the computer is actually 10 feet away from me, the other side of the room, because recording, you know, it does get very hot. And I've put my binocular glasses on, so I can just about make out where the mouse is on the screen. So hopefully this mic isn't picking up the sound. Anyway, yes, so charity, news, yes, got some news from Japan, yes, what's been happening in the news this week, because, you know, there's always lots of crazy things going on here, which I tend to ignore on the whole, but some weeks, you know, I do get a bit caught up in them. So this week we'll be hearing about more controversy from the government elevators, the lifts in the Ministry of Health, Labour and Welfare and Finance. Anyway, that's to come later, so I do hope you enjoy the show. Please do sit back and relax, and yes, and off we go. So So, of course, I'm still on my spring holiday, but I'm keeping very busy. One of the things I've been doing is working with Oxfam Japan, the UK-based charity that's now, of course, international, one of the biggest charities in the world, I believe. What Oxfam does is, rather than simply dump food on communities that have been affected by civil war or natural disasters, what Oxfam will do is they will, for example, give the community the cows, the sheep to set up their own farms, or the tools to make rugs, and then they'll set up a sort of a supply chain and a market whereby those communities, so that those communities can sell their products, become self-sustaining. A lot of charities, of course, in the early days, you know, after a disaster, communities do need food, you know, immediately, and water. But if you continue doing that for 6 months or whatever, you'll find that those communities become dependent upon that charity, and then when the charity disappears, as inevitably it does, leaves the area, then of course the community's back to square one. So Oxfam is quite forward thinking in a way. Anyway, so through Mixi, which is an online, Japan's biggest online social networking service, I found the Oxfam community and I got in touch with a couple of people, and that way I was put in touch with a group of 10 university students who form a group who meets once a week at the Oxfam office in Ueno, Tokyo, and we've been planning this event, the one-day Oxfam shop. Of course, in the UK there's a lot of Oxfam charity shops, but in Japan I don't think I've ever seen a charity shop. I may have done, but I probably, if I did, I didn't realise it was a charity shop. But I'm not aware that they exist. I don't think charity shops exist. So basically, yeah, what we'd really like is to have a permanent charity shop for Oxfam. But initially, you know, we're trying it out. So we thought, okay, we'll do it for one day. So we spoke to all our friends and got all their old clothes, and you know, I emptied out Twinkle's wardrobe when she wasn't looking, and collected lots of junk from all over the place. Good quality junk, of course. And we held this charity shop on Saturday in Heaven's Door in Shimokitazawa. That's the bar run by Paul, very nice British guy. Thank you, Paul, for making it all happen. And we stood on the street with a big board saying flea market, and there was me shouting, "Flea market yattemas!" And everyone going, "Bloody foreigners, be quiet, urusai yo!" But still, couldn't be helped. So yes, we got a lot of traffic, and we sold a lot of stuff. That was really great. So thank you very much to everyone who took part and came along and bought stuff and made it happen. Great. The next event, which I've mentioned before, is Trail Walker, which is a 100-kilometer hike in 48 hours from Odawara to Fujimoto. I think it's Fujimoto. Oh, I can't remember what it's called. It's the foot of Mount Fuji. Is that Fujimoto? There's a word for it. I forget. It's a really tough course. Myself and Twinkle's father, who's also taking part, did a section of the course, 2 weekends ago? 20 kilometres, so not that far, but, oh my god, my knee nearly fell off. It was so painful. It was pretty tough, and that was only a fifth of the course. So we're aiming to raise £2,000, Yonju Hachimanen. So far we've raised just over £700, thanks to all the eight team members. We've got two teams of four, so eight of us, and we've all donated quite a bit, and we're now raising money. We're getting there. You know, we're just over a third of the way towards our target, which hopefully, of course, we'll break. And training for that's going to be great fun, real challenge. And there's other university students, Sheffield University students taking part, Nigel and John, and Nigel's missus as well. She's going to be taking part, and my good friend Tom, who we've heard on this podcast in the past, and Twinkle's father, and a couple of people who I've met through Oxfam. So yes, if you'd like to find out more about that, do go to www.tamegoeswild.com/trailwalker, and I'll put a link also to it from this podcast's website, which is ayearinjapan.com. So yeah, very busy training for that. I'll be going down the gym later and grooving with all the oldies, because the gyms here, you know, they're full of people in their 80s who are doing the most. They're so energetic, it makes you feel completely inadequate. You know, there's like this. I was on the bench. What is it? Is it bench? Not bench press. No, I can't remember what it's called. It's the thing that you do sit-ups on. Anyway. And, you know, there was me struggling to do sort of more than 10. And there's this guy in his 80s next to me on the other one. And he's going up and down, up and down, up and down, you know. It's, oh, crikey. And then he comes over to me after the hour. He says, oh, you're not doing it right. You need to be doing it like this. Oh, see, I can't tell. Thank you so much. And yeah, and my God, these elderly people, they're so energetic. It makes you feel positively exhausted. So, anyway. So yeah, so it's all very exciting. So highly recommended. When you come to Japan, get involved in some voluntary work. Voluntary work, there's a lot of it in Japan, of course. Charities are not so well respected as they are in the UK. People are a bit... they don't trust charities so much. They're less willing to part with money and give to charity, which is a bit of a shame, actually. I mean, it hasn't been helped by things like when the Niigata earthquake happened. There was a scam whereby someone set up a charity, took lots of money, and then disappeared. But yeah, we found it pretty tough to raise money here in Japan. Although, you know, we're getting there. We're getting there. So yeah. I mean, my university's got a voluntary department. Just, you know, pop into your local volunteer department. Local councils have them as well. And, yeah, it's a great way to get involved with the local community and practice your Japanese and things like that. So highly recommended as a part of your year abroad if you are going to be studying in Japan. And I think it should be a compulsory part, actually, of everyone's degree program, or if they're at a school over here. So anyway, so that's a little bit about volunteering in Japan.
Prime Minister Abe says there will be no apology even if US Congress passes sex slavery resolution. Tokyo. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said Monday he will make no apology for Japan's forcing women of other Asian countries to provide sex for the Japanese military during World War II, even if the US Congress passes a resolution urging him to do so. Abe told the House of Councillors Budget Committee, the draft resolution the US House of Representatives Foreign International Relations Committee is discussing is not based on facts, and he will not apologise even in the event of its passage.
Yes, well, this has been in the news all week. This is Japan's headline news this week, basically, with a new story coming out every day based around the issue of the Imperial Army's use of Asian women in the Second World War to provide sex for Japanese soldiers. I mean, it's one of the most shameful aspects of the war in the Pacific, whereby... Basically, yes, Asian women, from all over Asia, were shipped in to work in Japanese brothels, or were placed in Japanese brothels for the use of the soldiers. Now, the government's, typical of the Japanese government, refuses to offer any proper apology, any proper compensation. They did actually come up with a compensation plan. But this compensation fund was not government funded. It was based on people donating money to it, and then this would be then given to the victims of Japanese industry that they had in the war. So the government is basically not acknowledging what happened, So a lot of people are, of course, very, very upset about this. That even today, I mean, it's based on facts. There are documents proving that this happens. There's, of course, the people who suffered are now dying. So I guess the government is just hoping the issue will just disappear over time. But I mean, for example, this week there was a Japanese veteran who came out in the news and said, "No, you know, this happened. I had sex with, you know, hundreds of Asian women during my time in the Imperial Army, and the conditions for them were terrible, and the government should apologise and opt for compensation." Then the government says, I mean, as we heard in that news briefing, they say it's not based on facts, and the government will not apologise. It's typical of the Japanese government's approach to Japan's behaviour in the Second World War. I really don't get it. I really don't get it. Why Japanese should be so damn proud, or the politicians at least should be so damn proud, so as they can't apologise for these horrendous things that happened in the past. I mean, it didn't help that the Americans sort of agreed to hush everything up after the war, you know, because of the Cold War, oncoming Cold War, and they needed Japan on their side. But it's been quite a horrendous story, really. Who knows when this saga will end? I mean, you know, it's mad, mad. Another issue which has been in the news, and something which I personally feel quite strongly about, is the use of seatbelts in the back seat. Now, you may think this is not a particularly important issue, but basically what it is there is this idea that you are safe if you're sitting in the back seat without a seatbelt. And yet, if you watch the videos of the crash test dummies, you know, if you're sitting in the back street, you go over the headrest, straight through the windscreen, especially children. Now, I had sort of direct experience of this, almost, you know, not really. Anyway, I'll tell you the story. It was in 2005, and I was in a car with three friends, and one of them had a small child who was about 2 years old. Now, as is typical in Japan, this small child was allowed to sort of jump up and down in the back seat and play around, and, you know, and there was no seatbelt, they're just standing around. And we're driving along, and I'm thinking, this is so wrong. This road was a very dangerous road, it was very windy, and we're driving relatively fast. And I was thinking, you know, if we had an accident, this child would be going straight through that windscreen. Anyway, we're driving along, and then we see some red lights flashing ahead. Oh, okay, slow down. There's an accident has happened. And there, by the side of the road, lying down, this accident has only just happened. Lying down by the side of the road is a small child with blood pouring out of their head, and an absolutely distraught mother with the child. Now, I'm thinking, right, okay, maybe this will make my friends realise, you know, what's going on in their own car. And yet, all they did was, oh, that's terrible, and the ambulance had just arrived, and oh, that's terrible, and then carried on driving. Leave, you know, and yet their own daughter was still jumping up and down in the back of the car, and I'm thinking, my God, you know, don't they appreciate what the risk is? They've just seen it with their own eyes. Oh, it got me so mad. So that's one of my sort of one of my things when I'm in cars in Japan, is I always tell people, well, I don't tell people I don't know that well, but for example, if Twinkle's in the back seat of the car, I will tell her to please put her seatbelt on, because it's just dangerous not to. Anyway, the reason it's in the news this week is because finally the police department has put in a request for a new law to be passed whereby the wearing of seatbelts on the back seat is compulsory. So I'm very happy about that, and I do hope that it becomes law. Final news item from Japan this week. Very, very, very hot topic, has been causing an absolute storm. walking down the street, you can't move more than 50 meters before someone says to you, "Have you read that story? Did you hear that news?" Anyway, I'll just get our news reporter in to read the story.
Stickers in ministry elevators warn people not to talk. Stickers telling people to remain silent in elevators at the Ministry of Health, Labour and Welfare have started to attract the attention of users. The stickers placed in elevators at the ministry headquarters carry the message, "Silence, please. Hold your talk for a moment," in English and Japanese. Originally, the stickers were designed by a private company frustrated by people chatting in its elevators. They were intended to raise workers' manners and to prevent people from inadvertently mentioning confidential issues in informal conversations. The stickers appear in all 18 elevators of the ministry, but so far there have reportedly been no complaints from workers about being told to keep their mouths closed.
My God, talk about a nanny state. I mean, come on. You know, not allowed to talk in an elevator. I mean, I can perfectly understand the thing about not being allowed to smoke on the street, and of course there's the unspoken rule that you're not allowed to eat on the street as well, which is, I find a bit silly, really. I can understand not eating on trains, perhaps, because they might get messy, but, and eating on trains is pretty, you know, you see someone eating on a train, you shut up intake of breath. So yeah, so not talking in elevators, my God, what is this country like? Where am I living? What am I doing here? I should go back to England and talk as much as I like in any elevator. In fact, I should make that a policy, actually, whilst in Japan, to talk as much as possible when in elevators. So, hurrah for noisy people in elevators. Anyway, that's the end of the news from Japan this week.
Learning Japanese, I think I'm learning Japanese, I really think so. Learning Japanese, I think I'm learning Japanese, I really think so. Learning Japanese, I think I'm learning Japanese, I really think so. Learning Japanese, I think I'm learning Japanese, I really think so.
I thought in this new education orientated type podcast, I thought I'd bring you some tips on learning Japanese. And because this is a podcast, it means it's really technical and modern and wow, and 22nd century. So I thought, you know, I'd recommend some things that you can do on your computer because they're like really, you know, amazingly modern things, aren't they? Well, they didn't have them a long time ago, you know. Right, okay. Excuse me. Rikai.com. RIKAI.com. Rikai, I think it's Rikai.com. Yeah. Rikai. Fantastic website here. I still use it quite a bit, actually. Basically, what you can do is you can paste... If you get an email in Japanese, you can copy it, paste it into the little box on Rikai.com, and then click on Go. And your email will appear just as it is in your email client thing. But when you move the mouse over the letters, it will give you the reading and the meaning for that particular kanji or that particular word. So it's really handy. I'm using it less, obviously, as my understanding of Japanese kanji increases. But it's extremely useful, especially for beginners. Rikai.com. Basically means you can read any email in Japanese. And in fact, even if you're not studying Japanese, you can still use it. You can also put in a web address of a, say, for example, yahoo.co.jp. Put that in, and it will bring you the whole page. But whenever you move over any kanji, any Japanese, it will give you the English definition. There's also a plugin for the Firefox web browser, which of course you should all be using. Yes, and that does the same thing. You just get ask it to give you the readings for any Japanese on the page. So, rikai.com, fantastic thingy that. My second tip for learning Japanese this week is recording vocabulary onto your computer, which you can then put onto your iPod. Now, I've been doing this for several years now. I can't remember when I actually started doing it. whether it might have been actually... Yes, that's right. It was when I was living in Hokkaido a few years ago. And basically what I do is whenever I get a new word, I write it down somewhere, and then I put it on my flashcards. And then when I have time, I basically record all that vocabulary onto an MP3 on my computer with the Japanese, the Japanese reading and then the English definition. And then I put that onto my iPod when I'm on the train or when I'm, you know, walking somewhere. I listen to that. And the thing is that if you think about it, for most of us, the number one way that we learn things is by hearing them. You know, we talk to people all the time. We learn things from listening to the radio, by listening to the television. Of course, we watch it as well, but, you know, the images often don't mean much. So, you know, hearing the vocabulary, and it's effortless. It's effortless. It's not like having to go through sheets and sheets of vocabulary you've got written down. So I thoroughly recommend that. So recording your stuff onto your computer. And of course, most laptops have mics built in these days. And that is the end of this week's language learning section. I do hope you found it useful.
Learning Japanese, I think I'm learning Japanese. I really think so.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of another episode of A Year in Japan. I do hope you've enjoyed it. It's all different from the others because, well, this whole Year in Japan thing is one big experiment. And don't we love it? Isn't it fun? Why don't you try it as well? Very easy. And send me the link. And yes, feedback. Hello, is there anyone out there? There's lots of you downloading it. There's no one talking to me. But I think this is quite a common thing. Unless you're all ganging up on me. No. Have to think positive. Anyway, got a very busy week ahead of me. Training for the Trail Walker and learning stuff. I've started putting all my grammar onto MP3 so I can listen to it on the train. I've been doing it with my vocab, but I thought, yeah, it works with the vocab. Let's try it with the grammar points as well. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, till next time, do take care and enjoy yourselves, whatever you're doing, wherever you are. And yes, you'll hear from me only too soon. Tane, bye-bye.